Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. This week, more of the movie Orwell Rolls in His Grave. It's a documentary about the incestuous relationship of big business, the news media, and a thoroughly corrupt national government. I hope you'll stay tuned. What a month April was! Like a recurring nightmare, George W. Bush kept reappearing. First, there was a Blue Ribbon Commission report on torture. W.'s name came up a few times. The next day, there was the gala opening of the W. Bush Presidential Library. Obama was there, smiling, and the media were there, oohing and awing. And a complete library it is, too, containing all three books, including My Pet Goat. This bipartisan love fest forced us to take another look at Orwell Rolls in His Grave. Let's start off with a little background, a little refresher course in the events of the year 2000, which the movie talks about. Then, back to the movie. The big corporations that control the U.S. media really, really wanted George W. Bush to be president, and they shaped their campaign coverage accordingly. So they did not investigate the true story that, in the Texas Air National Guard, W. had gone AWOL for extended periods, and also had refused a mandatory physical, all without any punishment, of course. At the same time, they played up big every Republican charge that Bush's opponent, Al Gore, was a habitual liar. That liar Gore claimed he invented the internet. That liar Gore claimed that he had discovered the pollution at the Love Canal. Remember that? All of these charges were false, but the media played them up so fully that most citizens ended up thinking they were true. The presidential election of 2000 hinged on the state of Florida. The Republican governor of Florida was Bush's brother, Jeb. The Florida state government committed massive acts of electoral fraud. Among other crimes, they purged the voter rolls of thousands of citizens who were guilty of being black. That story was exposed by the BBC in England, among others, but the U.S. press would not investigate it. The official vote count in Florida was so close that Florida law required a recount, and the Florida State Supreme Court duly ordered one. The Republicans appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and in a preposterous decision, the Supreme Court ordered the recount stopped. They ruled that the recount violated the civil rights of George W. Bush. That effectively handed the presidency to Bush. The court decision was widely reported by the media. The utter preposterousness of the decision was entirely unmentioned. Now, here's the part you may not have heard anything about. Right after Bush was inaugurated as president, a consortium of major media organizations arranged for an accurate recount of Florida's votes. The recount clearly showed that Gore had won a good majority of Florida's popular votes. Gore had carried Florida. Therefore, Gore was elected as president. Bush was inaugurated as president only because the Supreme Court had ordered the Florida recount halted. Albert Gore was elected president in 2000, but somehow somebody else got inaugurated. Now, does this sound like a news story that deserved some press coverage? Silly citizen, think again. It sounds unbelievable, but as Casey Stengel said, you could look it up. In fact, you'll have to look it up, because the American media decided not to trouble your pretty little head by reporting it. As I said, the corporations that control the media really, really wanted Bush to be president. The five most right-wing members of the Supreme Court really, really wanted Bush to be president. So they made him president, with a little help from Brother Jeb. Call it democracy, and you'll have Orwell rolling in his grave. Which is the name of the movie? Which we will return to now.
In close to 11 years, we've done more than 100 reports. The reports and investigations about public servants screwing up or systemic abuses of the public trust by public officials almost always get covered. We're the ones that broke the Lincoln bedroom scandal about the Clinton White House. We've done a lot of this kind of thing. When we do those stories, they get covered and the media jumps on them, frankly. We have a news conference. We normally have 50 or 60 reporters, 4 or 5 cameras. But I have to tell you, when we've investigated corporations, for some reason it just doesn't get covered. What can I say?
I see the Business Week cover a short while ago. The majority of Americans believe that corporate America is just one corrupt institution that needs to be reined in.
In some ways, corporate power is treated by our news media much like communism is treated by the Soviet press. You know, in the Soviet media, the bad commissar who didn't meet the tractor quota could be skewered in the media. Pravda or TASS could give the guy a hard time. But the system of communism is off limits. And in many respects, the occasional capitalist or firm that might make a bad tire or bad seatbelt can be skewered. But the system as a whole is always off limits.
Congressman Bernie Sanders.
In my entire political life, not one reporter has ever come up to me and said, Bernie, you know, the average worker is today working longer hours for low wages than 25 years ago. What the hell are you doing about that? Why do people have to work 50 or 60 hours a week? Bernie, what are you going to do about the plants that are being shut down in Vermont where companies are moving to China? What are you going to do about that, Bernie? Never been asked to me.
Why not?
Because those are questions that the reporters are not allowed to think about. You want, in a sense, you know, people say, well, do you think, Bernie, that there's a conspiracy, that Jack Welch is on the phone with every reporter for NBC telling them what to ask? Of course not. But what goes on, there's a framework of thought that you are allowed to have. And it goes from here, it goes to there.
And everybody kind of has the same mindset, you know.
Joe Klein's executive producer, Fox News at 10.
This story plays, this is a lead because it, you know, it screams. This is a, you know, everybody kind of has the same approach to it.
Mark Crispin Miller.
Everybody knows about Enron and how the guys at the top managed to cash out very handsomely while preventing the pensioners from withdrawing their money in time to prevent complete ruin, financial ruin. Well, I mean, there's a history behind this, you know. George Bush, who is, of course, a good friend of Kenneth Lay, cashed out in exactly the same way, you know, as a major shareholder in Harkin.
According to the Center for Public Integrity, George Bush served on the Harkin Energy's board and was able to realize a huge profit of $848,000 by selling his stock in the corporation. Harkin had concealed its losses by selling some of the firm's assets to a group of insiders and declaring a profit. Shortly after he sold, the stock price plummeted. He reported the sale to the SEC 34 weeks late. Bush was on the audit committee and the restructuring committee. He claimed he didn't know.
I propose some tough new standards for corporate reform. Like you all, I took a look out there and saw a problem. And the problem was we had some folks who were trying to fudge the numbers. We had some people who decided they weren't going to tell the truth when it came to their assets and liabilities.
The Harkin inside trading story was reported by the Center for Public Integrity 7 months before the presidential election. But the mainstream media chose not to report the story.
This represents a kind of insider trading. It's obviously epidemic at the top.
In the 2000 election campaign, the mainstream news media hinted that Al Gore was a liar. At the same time, the press ignored or glossed over serious questions about George Bush. From repeated allegations that he had gone AWOL to inside trading. Is there a connection between Bush's avowed policy to completely deregulate big media and their see no evil news coverage? Call it a coincidence.
You know, they'll cover whatever they damn well please. And it's not going to get in the way of the bottom line. It's not going to cost a lot of money to produce. And it's generally not going to upset the powers that be, of which they are a major part themselves. And that's where we are as a country, and it's really grim to watch. It's very depressing.
Bush made millions of dollars as governor of Texas, and his father is now making millions of dollars as a worker for Carlisle, making millions of dollars thanks to the policies of his son. His son has all around him in the White House and throughout the government all kinds of people from Lockheed Martin. And Lockheed Martin's making out like a bandit because of the war on terrorism. This is a scandal of such magnitude, you know, that you'd think that the press would be thanking its lucky stars that it happened on their watch, because it's such a great story. No, it's too big for them to cover.
But by and large, on the right at least, media and concern about media is at the top of the list.
Danny Schechter.
Republicans and the right wing mobilize, they organize, they train people to be in the media. Right-wing foundations spend money on media programs. They fund and subsidize a media presence to create an environment friendly to the views of a real minority in our country by actual numbers.
In 1971, Lewis Powell, a corporate lawyer, was 2 months from being nominated to the Supreme Court by President Nixon. He wrote a memorandum expressing his concerns about how consumer activists and progressives were infecting the general population with an anti-corporate bias. This treatise circulated among a number of wealthy industrialists. One of them was Joseph Coors, who in 1972 provided initial financing of $250,000 for the Heritage Foundation. So began the neoconservative movement to influence the media.
What we've seen since the mid-1970s is that all the great conservative foundations have devoted almost all their money to ideological warfare. So much of journalism depends on who the source of the story is. And so you've seen the creation of these foundations or institutes in Washington, like the American Enterprise Institute, the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, that basically are extraordinarily well-funded groups.
Reclusive billionaire Richard Mellon Scaife funds many of the right-wing think tanks. He also underwrote the Arkansas Project, a 4-year multi-million-dollar effort to investigate President Clinton. What has happened is resident fellows at the think tanks are paid to create rationales for predetermined economic and political positions, much like it was done in the old Soviet Union. The truth of the matter is that billions of dollars are being spent to convince the public that their interests and those of the corporations are the same.
The first few times they employ one of these right-wing experts, they'll be called from the conservative American Enterprise Institute or from the conservative Cato Institute. But over time, they just drop that. And pretty soon, it's just from the Cato Institute. And pretty soon, it's just analysts. If you're a source and you can have someone weigh in on trade deals, on Supreme Court appointments, on tax bills, giving your perspective, if you've got a series of people who are, sound like they know what they're talking about, of all sorts of degrees, you can really influence the news.
Powell singled out commercial TV and the judiciary as areas to influence. TV because it shapes people's minds. The judiciary because many crucial decisions are made by the courts.
We have always had an unrealistic view of our judiciary. We don't hold our judges and our judiciary in general to the same standards of reporting as we do the legislative branch or the executive branch. There's much less coverage.
If the Supreme Court had done for Al Gore what it did for George Bush, I give you a 100% guarantee that I would have written the same identical book, The Betrayal of America.
Vincent Bugliosi, legal scholar.
5 members of the United States Supreme Court committed, in my opinion, and I feel very strongly about this, one of the biggest and most serious crimes in American history when they stopped the recount in Florida, took the election away from the American people, and handed it to George Bush. And in a fair and just world, these 5 justices belong behind bars as much as any American white-collar criminal who has ever lived. The mainstream media, they don't even want to talk about what the court did anymore. Their position is, and they've made it very, very clear, the election is over with. We've moved on to covering other matters. Now, mind you, and this is not to defend President Clinton,
But this is the same group, the mainstream media, who pursued Clinton not just day after day, not just week after week, not just month after month, but year after year. These five justices are ardent federalists, states' rights advocates. And they've said over and over again, we let state courts interpret state law. December the 8th, the Florida Supreme Court ordered a manual recount. The recount started the following morning, a Saturday, December 9th, 8 o'clock. At that point in time, Bush's lead had shrunk over Gore to 154 votes. 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Justice Antonin Scalia steps in with an emergency order supported by the four other justices. He said, we got to stop this recount because if it continues, it could, quote, threaten irreparable harm to George Bush, unquote. So even though the election had not yet been decided, the incredible Scalia was presupposing that Bush had won the election, and any recount that showed that Gore had won would threaten irreparable harm to George Bush. Now, if that doesn't show that these justices were trying to steal the election for George Bush, what in the world would?
We're supposed to believe as Americans that all judges have some sort of saint-like qualities, that they're not political in any way, and that we can't even discuss it.
Justice Clarence Thomas's wife works for the Heritage Foundation, a very conservative think tank in Washington, D.C., that assisted Governor Bush in his transition to power.
We don't look at their financial holdings. We don't look at the trips they take to conferences sponsored by ideological groups that want them to rule certain ways.
The night of the election, November 7th, Sandra Day O'Connor's at a cocktail party in Washington, D.C. with her lawyer husband, John. Dan Rather comes on the air at 8 o'clock and announces that it looks like Florida's going for Al Gore, whereupon O'Connor blurts out, that's just terrible. She was angry. She was upset. The Wall Street Journal found 3 witnesses at the party to confirm that story. Newsweek found 2. Both the Wall Street Journal and Newsweek went to Sandra Day O'Connor for a comment. She declined comment.
Conflict of interest. After the election, George Bush appointed Scalia's son Eugene and Rehnquist's daughter to positions within the administration.
Eugene Scalia is widely considered to be one of the most qualified lawyers ever nominated to the post.
The ties that bind Scalia and Bush's lawyer Ted Olson, who argued before the Supreme Court, come together in the Federalist Society, a judicial group with close ties to corporately funded think tanks. Society members like Judge Sentell in turn reject media regulation. Conservative judges have ruled that constraining the reach of media corporations violates their free speech rights.
If you read the First Amendment, there's no question but that free speech rights are rights that belong to citizens. They're individual rights. They're our rights. In the 70s, we started to get this new idea of commercial free speech. This is a very, very peculiar notion, commercial free speech, because what it does is it casts corporations, corporate entities, as persons, which they're not. I mean, they're not people. You can't find their graves anywhere, unfortunately.
The First Amendment has been warped so that we understand it now as a way essentially allow people who own media license to do whatever they want to do with the media that they own, with the property that they buy. The First Amendment becomes a barrier to understanding our responsibilities in a democracy.
Free speech, when you're talking about the media, it's just a fundamentally disproportionate right. My speech is equal to and as free as the speech of AOL Time Warner when they have this platform of access to the world that, you know, I mean, I'm one person.
Somehow, the freedom to inform the general public has become the exclusive right of media corporations.
Giving them free speech rights was a perverse move. And in fact, it was the kind of thing that conservatives, rock-ribbed conservatives, had ruled out as recently as the 40s.
The Telecommunications Act of 1996.
During the Clinton administration in 1996, behind closed doors, the rules of the airwaves were rewritten.
In radio, all regulation was literally thrown out. Small independent stations were bought up. Localism disappeared. Companies like Clear Channel went from owning a few stations to owning over 1,100 and dominated whole markets. But something else happened. Under Reagan, in 1987, the Fairness Doctrine was eliminated. Radio and TV stations were no longer required to air opposing viewpoints. This is partially responsible for the rise of right-wing radio. All the time, from coast to coast. The vice chairman of Clear Channel is Tom Hicks. In 1998, Mr. Hicks purchased the Texas Rangers baseball team in a deal that made President Bush a multimillionaire. Clear Channel banned Dixie Chick songs because the lead singer criticized the president on the run-up to the war.
Tim Robbins, actor and director.
A famous middle-aged rock and roller called me last week to thank me for speaking out against the war, only to go on to tell me that he could not speak himself because he fears repercussions from Clear Channel. They promote our concert appearances, he said. They own most of the stations that play our music. I can't come out against this war.
Winston Smith worked at the Ministry of Truth. His job was to alter past news stories so that the version of the truth given by the ruling elite was never contradicted. One of the most troubling things about the media's handling of the 2000 election came a year later. A consortium of major news organizations hired the respected National Opinion Research Council, called NORC, to inspect the 170,000 uncounted votes. NORC was not allowed to characterize its findings. The media companies did that. And the disturbing thing is that they hid the truth by distorting the Florida Supreme Court's actual ruling, which called for the counting of all votes where the intent of the voter was clear. According to the BBC's Greg Palast, who watched the NORC counting operation firsthand, one counter said, quote, "It screamed at you. If someone circled Gore, exactly who do you think they wanted as president?" The consortium did not comment on the exclusion of tens of thousands of clearly marked ballots, which the NORC data reveals. Instead, the consortium came up with a tortured analysis that showed Bush would have retained a lead under one method of counting, just the undervote. On December 24, 2000, on NBC's Meet the Press, the moderator, Tim Russert, said the following. "Florida, Florida, Florida is over. The board is now retired." And that was pretty much the end of the mainstream news media's coverage of the Florida recount and the Supreme Court's decision to stop the counting of votes.
Had Nicaragua had an election like this and the Sandinistas won, the very people who won the Republican election would have insisted that we not only invade Nicaragua, but that all the people who engineered the election be held for war crimes.
Vincent Bugliosi.
They know that they're not there serving at the will of the American people. They know that they stole this election and they created this fraud by keeping African Americans away from the polls. They know this. And they know they have very little time to enact their agenda because they know that they're going to get the crap beat out of them next time. Forget what the media is telling you, okay? This guy ain't gonna last, all right? He knows it. They all know it. But if they would do this, if they would stoop this low to steal our White House, what else would they do? What else are they capable of? What else are they capable of? I want to know.
Citizens have First Amendment rights to a diversity of antagonistic views.
Media reform is something that is absolutely crucial. It is the primary issue. It is the most important thing. Nothing is more important, because if we don't have a media system that we can use to get our word out, whatever our word may be, if there is not a viable democratic media system for getting that word out, forget it. You know, we're screwed. We're completely screwed. We need antitrust activity, okay? And that's a complicated thing, and it will require that we rethink the very basis of antitrust law, which at the moment is all economistic. We have to understand that the real reasons why we particularly need to look at antitrust in the realm of media industries is not for business reasons, not for economic reasons primarily, but because the content, the crucial content of the news is completely distorted by large commercial interests.
And with that, let's end our excerpts from the documentary Orwell Rolls in His Grave, produced by Robert Kane Pappas back in 2006. It's a nice look at the interpenetration of corrupt corporations, the corrupt news media that they own, the corrupt political system that is their co-conspirator, and the public interest be damned. And here's an update. On May 2nd, President Obama nominated the corporate lobbyist and venture capitalist Tom Wheeler to be the new chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. That's the agency that regulates television, radio, telephone, and internet access. The nominated chief watchdog of the news media was formerly chief executive of the National Cable Television Association, and then chief executive of the Cellular Telecommunications and Internet Association, both trade groups representing telecommunications big business. Wheeler was also a leading fundraiser for Obama's election campaigns in 2008 and 2012. Surprise! So don't worry, the broadcast news media and your First Amendment rights will remain in good, safe corporate hands. And for those who thought that anything would improve by replacing the Bush Republicans in government with the Obama Democrats, I will quote that other great media figure, the late Dear Abby, who said, "Wake up and smell the coffee." Or was that Ann Landers? I never could tell the two of them apart. I'm also having a hard time telling the Democrat and Republican parties apart, and telling the federal government and big business apart. And on that weary note, we too must part. Thanks to UnwelcomeGuests.net for the soundtrack we heard. And thank you for listening to New World Notes. We come to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of that beacon of light in darkest Connecticut, the University of Hartford. Check out our free archive of past shows at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. newworldnotes.blogspot.com. On behalf of the entire New World Notes staff, this is Kenneth Doust, advising illegitimae non carborundum. Please support alternative radio, this very station, for example, and please come back again next week. Ciao.